Make sure you get us loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
Everybody, welcome to Used Wigs Radio podcast number 48. People, it took the founder of Buddhism, Siddhartha Gautama, 48 days sitting under a bow tree to reach enlightenment. And I believe in our 48th episode, you too shall be enlightened by our epic talent.
Is that what happened when you Googled 48? Is that what you came up with?
That's what Wikipedia told me. In studio, we have our pal, Philadelphia Jandek expert and creative mind behind the film company After School Specialist, Phil Charon. Welcome, Phil, to Used Wigs Radio.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming out. Yeah, basically what I did is I put 48 in Wikipedia, and this gives you a bunch of nonsense. And I do remember reading the book Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse.
Uh-huh.
Very good book, actually.
It's a short book.
That's why I liked it.
Uh-huh.
Was that junior year of high school?
No, I was college. I went to a dumb high school where, you know, we didn't get involved in anything that deep, but... The one thing I did take away from the whole Buddha thing, and, like, you know, you always have little things about certain people that you think are good, like, conversation pieces. Like, do you know Buddha, like the statue of Buddha, the stuff on top of his head? Do you ever see what he has, like, a little hat, and it's just little droplets all over his head?
Do tell.
That's bird poop. It really is. It's from sitting under that tree for 48 days. It's bird droppings.
What?
So if you go and look at a picture of a Buddha, like a Buddha statue, that's where you people out there
You're
at
not
home,
saying there's actual bird droppings on it. You're saying that
sculpted into it is bird droppings.
Wow.
No.
Huh. When choosing a world religion, I feel like that would be a deterrent. You know, it's like that.
Well, I think it just shows that he was so focused on his path to enlightenment there that nothing could disrupt him. Right, I'm sure if you were sitting under
but
your
chair, but if you wore bird poop into an interview and you said that same that same thing, like you're still lost points. You didn't gain points.
But if the interview was to be the god of a new religion, well, that would just show your grit, don't you think? I teased in the beginning of the episode. You know, there are a lot of Jandek experts out there, but we wanted to bring in the preeminent Jandek expert in the Philadelphia area, and that's why Phil's joining us because. Phil went to see Jandek in concert. Now, a few people don't know who Jandek is. Todd pretty much wants you just to go find out by yourself. Todd's, right? Isn't that our new thing?
No, not me.
No, that was me. I was going to say, do your homework.
Everybody, go do your homework. Find out who this mysterious man is.
I'll give some background.
I like to deliver information right to their ear.
That's right. He's a... Phil, describe Jandek in just a sentence or two.
Well, I have to correct you first. I mean, describing me as an expert means that, you know, an hour's worth of web research and attending the show makes me...
Well, that is an expert in our day and age.
I guess, yeah.
Internet culture.
As long as you don't call me a fan, because I really wouldn't want to classify myself as that. But
who is, though?
Sometime in the 80s, these albums started showing up at independent record shops, and they were self-published, poorly recorded. The criticisms of them say you could actually hear the... guy hitting the stop button on his boombox before he went and published these things. And the only way that you could get them would be to go to these independent record stores, or eventually you could send a Sazy self-addressed stamped envelope out to...
Is that how you say that?
Yeah. Sazy, of course.
Don't you remember Zoom?
So you could send an envelope to Corwood Industries to some post office box in Houston. And then you would get a hand-typed catalog with some of the album titles crossed off if he wasn't in stock at that time, and some handwritten instructions on it. And it was literally typed on a typewriter. I mean, it wasn't, you know.
You could have used a spreadsheet.
Right.
Sounds very Daniel Johnston.
Yes.
Yeah.
It makes Daniel Johnston sound like a virtuoso.
And the albums were like, I think they were like $4 a piece, and shipping and handling was like $1 an album or something like that. So years ago, I heard an interview on the radio with someone who classified themselves, I guess, as a Jandek expert or something like that.
You're our tribal. Go on.
My arch rival, yes. And so I did some research on the intertubes, and I found some of the songs, and I pulled them down. I was working in an office with Russ at the time, and I pulled them out. I'm like, listen to this crap. And we listened to it. We were a little mesmerized, and so I sent my Sazy in, and I actually got the hand-typed catalog, which I ransacked my house for. I can't find anywhere. At that point, I think he had published like 50-some albums. Now he's up to like 60 or 70 albums.
Would you classify the music as good?
I don't even know that you classify it as music, really.
Music?
No.
I mean, like, it's all, it's really deep, it's outsider music.
Right? Outsider
music. So it's really detuned, it's really, you know, it's in the realm of, like, the Residents and things like that, but even less.
Is he even, does that guy know anything about a guitar that's holding it?
Yes, things that I've read say that the way he tunes, because he's always tuned off,
right?
But he knows music. He understands music and music composition.
Sounds so random. It sounds like the guitar equivalent of a cat walking across a piano.
When we were getting into it back when we were in that office, and you sent me a review, and one of the reviewers said something. I wish I could find the actual quote. It was like, picture if you took a microphone and you dug up an old tomb and you dropped the microphone down the hole and laid it on top of the corpse and dragged it around in there. That sounds better than right. Jandek or something like that. So,
yeah. Hey, while we're taking a trip down memory lane, we eventually got our hands on, a crudely produced DVD that was kind of a...
It's a documentary called Jandek Uncorked.
Yeah, documentary. Yeah. You, Russ, invited the three of us plus one other, and that was the first time that Jeff and I met.
Oh, yeah!
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And I,
you guys should hug.
Oh wow.
And
we are hugging right now.
I specifically remember.
Is that cologne talk?
It was the first time I met any of these guys, Phil for sure, and Jeff, and Ken. And I specifically remember trying to have a mnemonic device to remember their names because I'm bad at remembering names. So the way that they were situated, sitting on a couch in order, they were Jeff, Ken, Phil. And I also happened to know a Jeff who was a carpenter, and I was thinking what. Like kind of the wood frill, so I was like, Jeff, Ken, Phil, help me remember their names in order. Which allowed me to call them by name for the remainder of the evening.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. That's great. I think we should play a song.
I still have to use that when I call Jeff by his name.
Wow. Jeff, Ken, Phil.
So
Jeff, Ken,
Phil. We'll get back to talking about what Jandek is and get Phil's report on the show. Before that, we played the band The Annuals a couple of podcasts ago. They have a fantastic new recording called Wet Zoo. And the last two songs on that EP are the side project of one of the members, and that is called Sunfold. And this is a song by Sunfold called Between the Worlds.
I caught you looking through the other side of
Sunfold with Between the Worlds.
I like that, Russ.
I thought you might, Jeff. All right, so before we go to Phil's report from the Fantastic Show, I want to just draw everyone's attention to the beds that are playing beneath us. The music that you hear down there is being supplied by someone from the Philadelphia suburbs. His name is Rod DeGeorge, and he is a guitarist extraordinaire, kind of in the Satriani, Steve Vai vein, and he just put out a new album called Cosmic Playground, and he's providing all the bed music for us tonight.
Thanks, Guy.
Do you know him?
Actually, he is an old friend of mine. I used to play in a band of his in the mid-90s, I guess it was.
Bassstrap?
No. He always had like solo bands, and he would...
Beast Infection?
He would grab a bunch of...
Grand Theft Auto?
Other people to round out his lineup.
Was it the Grillables?
You're just reading band names off of your page?
Meth Lab for Cutie?
Elf
Made Man.
Alright, so tell us. So first of all, it actually was Jandek?
Yeah, so
what does
the
he
deal,
look
like?
Paint a picture.
He looks like he hasn't eaten in years. He's about like he's like in his mid 6 feet tall range. He's an older guy, he's probably in his 50s or probably mid or late 50s.
Oh yeah, I'm seeing pictures of him right here. Some blogs have pictures of him.
Yeah, we weren't allowed to take pictures of him. But
so what was the crowd like? How did he walk?
So all right, well I gotta set the whole stage here. First of all, he's only played out I think like 30 times since 2004. No one had ever really seen him play out, and then he showed up in Scotland, and a whole bunch of odd music people were standing there going, "This sounds kind of like Jandek. Wait, it looks like the guy who's on all the different pictures from the albums," and they snapped some pictures of him, and since then he's gone out and played a lot, or a lot for him.
Right.
So the weirdest way to set up the night was I pulled up in front of the Philadelphia German Society, or Pennsylvania German Society, whatever, it's down at Spring Garden Street, and right behind me pulled up four fire trucks and pulled out their hoses and started putting the building behind the concert hall out because it was on fire.
Ominous.
So I walk in the building and I had my ticket in my hand, everything. There's a couple of slackers sitting behind a bench. And I said, I'm here to see the show. And they asked for my name, and I told them my name, and they checked me off a list. There was no, like, checking the tickets. Or it was a really well-organized show. And I said, "Do you know the building's on fire?" And they said, "Yeah." Some people have told us this.
The building's on fire.
Do you think you could go ask?
Fire check. Phil, check.
Yeah. So they said, "Do you think you can go out?"
Phil's here. Let's start the show.
They said, "Do you think you can go out and ask the firemen if we can go on?" They were asking me this.
Oh, Jesus.
Because I happened to
opening act.
No. This was the ticket takers.
Okay.
Or name checker offers.
Right.
So I kind of looked at him for a second, and finally one guy's like, "I'll do it." And he got up, walked out of the room. So I went in the concert hall and sat down. It's like this big old Philadelphia like concert hall kind of room, but almost like a ballroom. So I sit down, and they said you have to be there at 7 o'clock promptly. So at 7 o'clock, nothing's going on. At 7:10, nothing's going on. I'm looking around, and back where there should be a snack bar, there's like a counter. There's a guy back there, and there's a group of people who keep walking up and talking to him, and then they turn around and walk away really quickly. And he had like a stack of stuff next to him. So I was like, "Oh, he's selling albums or something." So I go back there. I said, "What do you have?" Because I thought they were programs or something. He's like, "Oh, these are original first run concert posters." And he pulled one out from behind the snack bar, and it was a brown paper shopping bag that they had printed like Jandek in concert, Philadelphia, and the date. And he was selling them. Right. And like everyone else, I immediately turned around and walked away before he could give me his pitch.
That was the merch table at the Jandek
show? Yeah, that's all they were selling. We're like cut up shopping bags with posters printed on them.
Was this like an outpatient clinic? Like the people who were just mulling about at the show?
It was weird. It was like there was a whole blend of, clearly there were a whole bunch of music critic type people there.
Right.
Like people who are older and seem to have it all together, and then there were a whole bunch of people who could barely scrape together $25 to go see the show that were that didn't know all they had to do was give their name and get it checked off. They walked up the door, but it was like a huge mix that I couldn't really explain,
like how many people?
This cross section. The room, I counted chairs. The room would have sat 250 people, and it was probably about two-thirds full.
Huh.
So it was pretty crazy. So nobody came out until about quarter after seven. And they said, you know, we really wanted to start on time. Thank you, everyone, for following your instructions and showing up on time. But the ensemble is concerned about the fire behind behind the hall. And this is how he was talking. We're going to be a little late. And then he started to walk out, and someone's like, how late? And he said, oh, maybe another 15, 20 minutes. So by like 7:40, he came back out again to announce the show.
Take a little music break now, guys, with this is a new one by Robert Pollard. You might know him from such things as the band Guided by Voices. He has a new album coming out on June 3rd called Robert Pollard is Off to Business. This is a song called Gratification to Concrete.
Gratification to concrete, crown to the crucible complete. Now is what she brings. Now is what she brings. Gratification to concrete, crown to the crucible complete. Now is what she brings. What she brings. And she said, wow, 100 times, not just for people, people, yeah, who move like vampires, realize that they are guilty at the stations. Generations live like kings and queens. Tomorrow, it's a blast, it just
And that was Robert Pollard, the prolific singer-songwriter of Guided by Voices, who either with Guided by Voices or on his own, he puts out about an album of a year. I can't even begin to tell you how many albums he has out, but he's great. He's just so good. Awesome voice. And he's also an inveterate drunk in concert. So many of you who have seen Guided by Voices play over the years, you know you're either going to see one of the greatest rock shows ever or just a drunk on stage, swinging mic and hitting himself, and no one's having any fun. I've seen both types of shows. But he has a very Townsend-esque, kind of Daltrey-Townsend-esque combination when he's on stage, swagger. great performer. And it's his new album. And you can check out robertpollard.net for all your Robert Pollard needs. And we're going to wrap up some Jandek talk. So, Phil, what I'm getting at here, wasn't the most high-energy show? Was the audience like brimming with energy to hear this mysterious creature they know as Jandek? Or was everybody just kind of like sitting around like, hey?
No, it was like there was a librarian shushing everyone in the room. It was crazy. I mean, all the mutter, it was like really quiet muttering and stuff like that. So, like, right before the show started, this host comes out and asks everyone if they could please hold their applause in between songs.
Like a middle school talent show.
Until the performance is concluded, to preserve the life force of the show for the performers.
That sounds great. Good to me.
That was his. So we were all set up. So everyone just went completely silent at that point. I don't think anyone...
In most of our early podcasts, we also requested that of our listeners to hold their...
You hate when audience steps on the life force of the performance.
It's
true.
It's got to be... Yeah, it's tough.
To horn in on the experience.
So it wasn't just him?
No. So he comes out... He never plays alone. Okay. So he came out with... walking ahead of him was the harpist.
Right.
And a bassoon player and a clarinetist. So they all come out... And the crazy thing is he makes no eye contact with anyone. He's got his... little three-ring binder with all of his lyrics written down.
Why wouldn't
he? In a briefcase. He comes out, puts his briefcase down, pulls them out. He's wearing all black and a big black fedora on his head. And he sits down at the baby grand piano and puts his lyrics up. And then the other performers start. And he just kind of sits there and stares into space.
Oh, my God.
And they play for a while. And then he starts to sort of moan, croon his lyrics. And the first lines are things like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Or... I forget what it was, but the first three songs that he played were all this sort of... Clearly he was saying, I'm doing this because you guys wouldn't leave me alone. Like, you kept sending me letters or...
That's what he's moaning about. I mean,
he's not saying that, but it's like... He keeps talking about, like, I'm here because I'm painted in a corner, which was an actual line from, like, the second song or the third song or something. So it was all this crazy...
That sounds like the most miserable experience I've ever... I mean... $25?
He looked miserable.
He was miserable to be there, and you weren't even allowed to enjoy the performance by applauding or moving about.
No.
You know?
Yeah, and he played for two full hours. By the end of the third song, I was... Yeah, two hours straight. By the end of the third song...
Were you sweaty from dancing? Or? Go on, I'm sorry.
That's pretty funny. The crazy thing is people did get up and start to leave after about the third or fourth song, and I kept I kept thinking about it, and not a lot, maybe 20 people out of the whole room by the end of the show. There were some very clear fans there who were mesmerized. I actually dozed off about three quarters of the way through the show and woke up again. But I decided I was going to stick around because I was alone, so I wasn't torturing anyone but myself.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to see how it was going to end because he did not, at the end of every song, it would just kind of end. And then he would reach up and turn the page in his notebook.
Gosh.
And when he turned the page, you knew that was a sign there'd be another song.
Right.
And there would be this sort of nonverbal collective groan among people
like
in the room. You could just hear this.
Another song. No.
But the crazy thing was the band was really tight. They were all playing very crazy sort of avant-garde experimental jazz kind of stuff. But they weren't signaling to each other, but they knew exactly when to hand it off to each other. They knew when he was going to take over.
Did he show any chops? Like, could he play the piano?
Well, it's not like he was breaking into ragtime. And, I mean, it was like random. He was sort of just noodling around on the piano and accompanying his voice, which is...
You know what? I didn't even... you can actually go to YouTube, put in Jandek, and it looks like they have his performance from Glasgow.
That's worth checking out, and we should also play a little clip of a Jandek song right now.
Let's play a little. Let's get a taste. And you know, people, please, hold your applause.
You got real fancy instincts, but your mouth is so large. I think I see 100 people in it. I guess you'll like it that way, 'cause you're a flop.
So there you have it. Did it sound anything like that, Phil?
No, I mean, one of the things that I was really disappointed about the show was that most most of the stuff that I've heard has been guitar with some sort of band in the background, you know, and this was all like more experimental avant-garde jazz kind of stuff. So, but it was more like in the jazz world, and I wanted to hear more of the like.
Would you go again? Would you ever go again?
If I knew he was going to be playing guitar, I'd go again. I'd sit close to the back,
yeah,
so I could, you know, get out of there. Because the weird thing was when people got up and left, it's this big open room. Boy. Nobody's talking. The music's really quiet.
Yeah. And people get up.
And the floor is really squeaky. So when they're leaving,
I wonder what impact does that have on the life force of the concert when people begin to walk out.
I guess that's part of the life force. You hear like.
It was crazy. Your arm hurt from, you know, taping it with your cell phone?
Nobody pulled. They asked us not to take pictures or record it, and nobody pulled their cameras out. It was crazy.
Groupies milling about at the end.
No groupies milling about. There was a guy behind me who, every time a new song would start, he would sigh and be like, "Oh," and I guess he was with a date or something like that. And then eventually he got
there?
Up and left.
There were like some women there.
Yeah, there were four or five.
The worst date you could ever imagine. Now, can you imagine dragging someone?
So how did it end?
So,
Jandek lit himself on fire. Self-immolation. Yeah. He's now dead, and his misery is over.
So the only time he would actually turn to the audience, he wasn't turning to the audience. The guy who was running the sound was sitting over by the side, and he was clearly recording it. Like I looked over, he had Pro Tools up, and he had a mixer and all that kind of stuff, and a Mac laptop. So at the end of every song, Jandek would look over at him and make eye contact with him. And when the guy basically gave him the nod saying, "I got the song," then he would start the next song. Like that was the only motion of his head aside from singing.
So that'll be part of the next live album, like Jandek live.
Yeah, and he does. Like, he publishes all the album. He publishes all the shows live on his label.
Well, I think we've given everyone a good taste, and they're going to be rushing out. But I bet you everyone will be going to YouTube. And you can get Jandek just played South by Southwest. In 08, I guess, last month. So there's some video up of him playing. So that should be pretty interesting. I'll definitely take a listen. So, Phil, let us know next time he's back in town. So we can all...
I'll keep an eye out for him, too.
Oh, Jandek, what do you do next?
Time.
that was the Botticellis from the Daytrotter Studios and our good friends at Daytrotter, bringing us Awaiting at the Wall, but it's actually a George Harrison cover from his first solo album, double album, called All Things Must Pass, and it's called, when George Harrison does it, Awaiting on You All. But I think a really strong track by George Harrison that gets like next to no radio play and no one really knows, but super, super strong song, and finally, almost given the credit it deserves by the Botticellis, except for they messed up the name and called it Awaiting at the Wall.
If they did, we don't know exactly. Or
the Daytrotter people.
Right.
But I don't want to point fingers.
That's no, you really don't.
Right. I mean, we enjoyed it.
You pointed two fingers on it.
That's right.
Yeah. starting now, I don't want to point any more fingers. I'm running out of fingers.
They're, the Daytrotter people are just, they're probably all stoned and drunk and just pushing some archaic buttons under archaic machinery recording these songs. So give them a break, you know what I'm saying?
And you might recognize the Botticellis, probably named after the painter.
Oh, really?
I would assume.
I think of the baker. the house painter, Fred Botticelli, down the street.
Do you know Botticelli's work?
I mean, yeah, I know, of course.
You recognize this, right?
Yeah,
Birth
of Venus. That's probably the only one I could name. But
so 1400s Renaissance.
Yeah, he's pretty good, Botticelli.
So they say. Yeah, we're still talking about him, and bands are being named after him. So,
movies. There's one movie out that all the geeks, everybody's so excited for, and I look at it and I just get a giant headache, and I know it's going to suck.
Can we guess?
Yes.
Are you talking about the Indiana Jones?
No, that's going to suck in a different way. Iron Man, actually, I think looks pretty good.
I think both of those look good, actually.
I'm talking about Speed Racer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Now, it's just the whole fact that everything is CGI. You know, if it's a movie about a car and the love of going fast and a car and really getting into the whole car culture and that thing, that there's not a real car in it. And it's just overly saturated, CGI-driven, you know, Wachowski brothers pick. I haven't really heard any reviews yet. I'm sure all the geeks out there will be, glowing, it's the greatest thing in the world, but I'm just really getting sick of the...
Stephen Colbert did a pretty hysterical review of it on the Colbert Report. Yeah, and he basically referred to it as seizure-inducing.
It is. I mean, just watching the commercials, you know?
That's what the trailers look like. Like, when I saw the trailer for the first time, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. But I don't know, I've said that about movies that I've ended up liking, so...
Yeah.
I know I'm going to be disappointed because Chim Chim isn't going to disappear from one corner of the screen and pop up in the next and like pop all over the screen when he gets all excited, like he just sort of bounces around. That's not going to happen.
So that would be cool, though. You don't know.
That's really,
I know that's not going to happen. It's going to make me sad.
Did you guys watch the Speed Racer cartoon growing up?
Not a lot.
I guess Phil did.
Phil sounds like he's familiar.
I did. I don't remember the storyline, but I remember we were all thrilled in college when someone came back with the Racer X VHS bootleg tape of some sort where they revealed that Racer X was Speed Racer's brother.
Racer X was the brother, right?
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to ruin that for anyone out there.
Oh, I wonder if they do get into that in the movie.
Well, doesn't the brother die? Or he has a brother who dies, right?
I don't know. Or maybe that'll be saved for the sequel.
The guy who plays Racer X is, what's his name? Jack from Lost.
Yeah.
What? No.
What's his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Matthew Fox,
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know that, speaking of sequels, that, like, so at the end of Iron Man, I guess this has been done before, but at the end of Iron Man, if you stay in the theater and you watch the credits finish, yeah, they already show pieces from Iron Man 2.
Oh, that makes
sense. I'm serious.
Remember in the movie Flash Gordon, the end? Question mark?
It was.
Or the end of Breakin'. This movie's through, but wait till Breakin' 2.
Right.
Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, they did do that?
There's a rich tradition.
But there wasn't another Flash Gordon, was there?
There was not, but there was Breakin' 2.
So it's like, the Boogaloo end? Question mark, and then some studio exec is like, yes.
Yes, it certainly is.
No more money for you.
Right. That was probably my favorite Sam Jones picture, wouldn't you say?
Flash Gordon?
Yeah, that was my favorite Sam Jones picture. I believe that's the actor's name who played Flash Gordon. Right. Look it up. But that's one of those movies where you're just like, yeah, this guy's going to be huge. This movie's just going to... And then...
And nothing. Introducing I think he went Sam in. Jones.
There are videos on YouTube of Queen doing the Flash Gordon music.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Fantastic.
And it's cheesiness. Well, and it's grandiosity cheesy, yeah. Of yeah. Just cheese and... That movie's great. It is a fun movie.
Are you the one who sent me that video of that one guy from Queen? Oh, doing Biggles?
Yeah, you sent that to me. That was really odd.
He does the music for some movie called Biggles. Just Google Biggles and Queen on YouTube. It is one of the most outrageously bad music videos I have ever seen.
Yeah, it's insanely
and
bad.
Like funny.
Is it like a kid show, Biggles?
No,
sounds
no,
adorable.
Biggles was like that. Was that like biplane fighter in British like Pulp Fiction?
Oh,
I think he started. I think he was a character that started like in the 30s or something. He was like a character in British serials.
You know what's weird on YouTube? A lot of I've noticed, like, you get all excited, you look up an obscure band you like, and you're like, "Oh, there's a video for this song," and you play it, and it's all these little like fanboys. They make their own videos to songs.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of them are just like, I took 48 pictures of, you know, of Elliot Smith, put them together, and then I interspliced pictures of my girlfriend walking around a pond looking very meditative,
yeah.
And it's perfect. I know a lot of people think it's a real video. Like, no,
and
we really don't.
And I use the fade transition.
Yeah. But
find an actual YouTube video anymore because anything that's worth watching has 400 things that you have to sift through of people doing it with puppets, people doing it themselves, you know?
Right, right. The second any sort of viral video takes off, like, I can't believe that wacky guy did that, there's an answer to it, like, mm-hmm. You know, so you're right, it's tough to filter through and find stuff.
So more comments on the summer movie?
I'm very looking forward to the redemption of M. Night Shyamalan.
What is his new one?
His new one is called The Happening.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what's happening, huh?
And it does look good. Have
they shown the trailer?
The trailer's good. I think it's like this ominous plague hits the world. You don't like it, Todd, I can tell.
He's out of stories.
Yeah, you're right.
Period. He had 1.5 in him. Done.
What was the 0.5?
I think Unbreakable.
Unbreakable was great.
Unbreakable was
I
awesome.
I think he's a great director. I think that the how is tremendously interesting in all his movies.
Yes.
The what is done.
He's telling shitty
stories very well.
He should stop.
He should just direct.
He should. Yeah, he should direct. Huh.
He's a very fresh director, I think, you know? But get away from your own material. We don't need a twist ending anymore, and it's trite and contrived.
Why don't we ask someone who actually directs films?
Where do you stand?
You dally in the film.
I think he kind of peaked a little bit, but every time a new one comes out, I think he's going to redeem himself, so.
We hope, because he's a Philadelphia guy.
Yeah, he's an
Indian American.
Yep.
we always pull for the Indian American.
Yeah, yeah.
We call him Native American stuff.
He's just signed a whole bunch of deals for the big contract to produce more films for whatever studio he's with now.
Yeah, he's not with Disney anymore, but he's doing Avatar: The Airbender, which is this insanely popular like anime kids show.
He's making
the movie out of the kids' TV show.
Avatar,
I believe it's called Avatar: The Airbender.
Yeah, it's like a ninja cartoon and series of video games.
Didn't he direct some other animations?
I think it might be a live action version of it. Yeah, yeah. I don't think they would just make an animated version of an animated show. I think they're gonna do like a big production. So that's getting them a lot of buzz.
You know, have you seen like there are so many comic book movies coming out. And I can't say that I have an issue with that because I love them.
Well, you know why?
There's another Hulk coming out with Ed Norton this time, I think.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because Stan Lee and Avi Avred, and they finally put a Marvel movie studio together.
It's Marvel Films.
It's Marvel
Films.
Here
they come. But I mean, there's a bunch of them. So we know there's Iron Man 2. There's the Hulk 2. New Hulk.
Well, you know, in the new Hulk, you know who makes a little cameo, I heard? Iron Man.
That's pretty cool. Because they're doing a new Captain America.
Yes.
Then they're doing an Avengers with all those guys together.
Yep.
I love that.
Well, they're great comic books, but every comic book movie that I've seen, I've been disappointed.
Every comic book movie.
The first Batman, I was fond of. And I think that's
Why are people getting so excited about another Superman or Batman? Like, just let it go. Like, it's not that great of a character that you need to keep
Are you excited
making.
About the Iron Man movie?
I'm excited about the Avengers.
How
great will the Avengers be?
And that's the Avengers, like, all those characters together.
Together?
Like, together, Todd?
It's like the Hall of Justice, but not lame DC characters.
Like,
it's
we are the world.
Awesome Marvel characters.
Like, a lot of awesome people together, it makes it, like, incrementally more awesome, right?
The X-Men movies were really cool.
They were great.
Anyway, so, there's
Wait. All right.
There's one more. Ant-Man.
Yes.
Like a super obscure character.
But wasn't he one of the Avengers as well? Or is he the,
I think
he was a defender.
He was defender.
He was
wasn't
on the
it?
Defenders.
Yes, yes.
But he's like just a little guy.
He's just a little fella. Yeah.
And then there'll be a crossover with Ants or Bug's Life.
Right.
So what I want to ask you, what obscure, like, okay, they're gonna tell the story of Iron Man and Captain America and all like the major guys. What obscure characters are you looking forward to them getting to?
Right.
Ziggy.
Like, an Alpha Flight movie.
Ziggy.
You know, or you
Richie,
know,
Richie
like,
Rich.
Rom Space
Rom.
Thing. I tell you what.
What?
You know, Rom, the Rom comic books were made. They created basically where that came from was. Look at those. All right.
I'm embarrassed for you.
Rom was a toy first.
Yeah.
And then whatever the company was that put him out was like, we need some marketing behind this. So they approached Marvel to create a comic book of him. And I loved the Rom comic books.
Yeah.
I thought they were awesome. They actually created a really cool story around him. Then it ran for like 10 years.
That would make for an interesting thing. I would like to see an Alpha Flight comic book movie.
You were serious?
John Byrne is my all-time favorite writer and artist, and he's the one who kind of launched Alpha Flight. Yeah. Jeff, what do you say?
Asbestos Man.
Asbestos Man.
I think Asbestos Man I'm going to be into, and I'm looking at a list of Marvel characters right now.
You're just glancing through right now trying to figure out who it might be?
Yes. There are just thousands. I mean, just Flum, Flubber, Fly Girl, Flying Tiger.
Flum?
Foggy Nelson.
This
Foggy Nelson.
Flum.
All right, we need to play some music.
All right. Why don't we play a little something? This is probably the most upbeat, happy, perky little song I'll ever play on this podcast. But I don't know. I just liked it. It's a little piece of Britpop, and this band's actually from NYC. It is the Baskervilles, or just Baskervilles, with A Little More Time.
You're a disaster just like me. Broken plates and spilling drinks. I make you laugh and your eyes roll. Your glasses slip off of your nose. In a little more time, a little more time. And when you pin the order up, your eyes have gone by long enough to know you're not thinking of him. But I can't say anything. And I can see in a little more time.
I make a drink, small table 10.
You say you've been fighting again. Sit around after we close. See you smiling and I know.
Song reminds me of getting a shiny new bike on my birthday and eating Tic Tacs.
Right?
Is that like that?
You got Tic Tacs on your birthday?
Did you eat the Tic Tacs on the bike, or?
I'm just saying it's a culmination of all things good and simple and pure.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. I like the trade off of the guy singing and the girl singing. It's just happy.
They're frolicking. That's audio frolicking.
They're gambling, and not gambling like gamble, like to wager money. Gambling like to frolic through a field.
My 87-year-old grandmother, for every single holiday, sends every one of her grandchildren a box of Tic Tacs in the color for the holiday.
Wow.
So,
so you get the orange ones
nice.
On Halloween.
You look forward
that's
to
exactly it. It actually, you know what? Every time there's a holiday, one comes for Lisa, one comes for me, and when we open our and when we pull the envelopes out of the mailbox, you can hear the rattling. It's like, we got our Tic Tacs. We get orange for Halloween, we get red for Valentine's Day, green for St. Patrick's Day.
What do you know about that?
What do you get for Arbor Day?
That's it.
Groundhog Day.
She mails us a bag of peat moss. So that's a little different.
Let me get back and give the Baskervilles a shout-out, people. Then we'll get back to Tic Tac Central. You can check out the Baskervilles at myspace.com/BaskervillesNYC. And that's from the new album Twilight coming out on June 3rd. Remember the old Tic Tac commercials with that woman who was kind of hot? And she'd be like holding up the Tic Tacs?
It's not just a mint. It's a Tic Tac.
That was Mark Harmon's sister. Mark Harmon, anyone?
Yeah,
anyone?
Back to summer school.
Summer school, yes. I ate dinner next to Mark Harmon when I was in California.
What was he eating?
He was having a very light salad, it looked like. And he's much more handsome in person, a little taller in person, very similar hair color to yours, Phil, a salty mixture of grays and blacks.
He will not watch himself
have sex with a minor.
Minor is at a coal miner, right?
Right, I'm at a coal miner. I'm not some perv. Take off your helmet.
On TV or on a movie.
Really?
He won't watch himself, as a matter of fact, because I remember years and years ago, maybe even seeing him on the Carson show.
Yeah.
When, like, one of his 1986 movies was coming out.
Yes.
And he literally turned himself around.
Wow.
When they showed the clip, and he went on to talk about how uncomfortable it makes him feel. Like,
fun facts about it.
Yeah.
Here he is.
I read an interview with a guy in the house. What's his name? The guy...
Hugh Laurie,
yeah, and he won't watch it because he can't stand listening to himself without his accent.
Oh, I have such good tangents right now. Let me try to focus. First of all, getting back to Mark Harmon, People Magazine's first sexiest man ever. Number two fact about Mark Harmon, he made a great movie that was shot in Philly called Stealing Home with Jodie Foster. Rent it. It's a really good movie. It's touching, poignant, funny, all that good stuff. Getting back to Hugh Laurie, before Hugh Laurie, he's a Brit, before he hit House... He was in a great, maybe the best espionage series out, and I just started watching it on DVD. It's called MI5, a BBC production. It was originally called Spooks. Started in 2002. It is awesome. You got to rent it. Go on Netflix. I'm so pumped. I keep forgetting
that. He's going through the bullet points in his head.
It's picture the series 24, but not for blithering idiots. Okay? So all you idiots out there, you mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging, who like, you know, let's kill all the Arab terrorists. This is a very thought-out, well-executed post-9/11 series about... the people who work in the British Secret Service.
Is he the lead?
What's that?
Is he the lead?
No, he's this great character who's in the MI6, who they butt heads with. The MI6, as you know, is the...
He's a smart and sassy robot.
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave?
The MI6, of course, is the counterintelligence. You know, they deal with outside of the country, external. MI5 deals with internal. Anyway, so we discussed Hugh Laurie. Now you know to rent an early Hugh Laurie... series called MI5, and I guarantee you'll love it. And then Mark Harmon. Wow, we've never thought we'd spend so much time on this.
Any podcast ever mentioned Mark Harmon?
I don't know. I'm baffled. I'm completely lost. I'm waiting for Jeff to put us back on the rails.
Okay, I got to get back on. We went off the rails on that crazy train. Scarlett Johansson, as you know, put out an album of Tom Waits covers.
Oh,
I know. I want to get someone's blood boiling because I can't.
I haven't heard it yet, but.
I don't need to hear it.
I
don't
want to get to my shout because my shout is a Tom Waits shout.
Right. Tom Waits.
I'll hold it.
Here's the deal. She is a dummy actress. She's famous for having a large pair of breasts. That's it. She's not a great actress, and she, you know, flits about Hollywood. So, you know, so she's like, oh, the band, they did Just Like Honey. Remember the movie? I'm going totally tangent, but I'm going to reel us all back in. The movie that brought Bill Murray back into the
Lost in Translation.
Lost in Translation. She was in that.
Yes.
There was a band who played the song Just Like Honey. I'm totally blanking on her name. Anyway, they're an old band, indie band. And she liked them so much, they invited her up on stage a few times to sing a song.
The Jesus and Mary
Jesus
thing.
And Mary Jane, right. Of course. So she got this little bug in her ear, like, I'm a good singer because I sang with the Jesus and Mary Chain, and I'm indie and I'm hip. And they're like, that's right, you can do anything because you're in Hollywood. And, you know, no one tells her anything different. So she's like, how can I get real indie cred? Maybe I'll think of, like, who's the most indie person I can, you know, do a cover. I'm not talented enough to write my own songs, because if I was a true talent singer-songwriter, I put an album of my own stuff out first. Then I could prove myself as a musician
like
and
Minnie
artist.
Driver.
Right. Oh, stop. So she's not talented, so she has to, like, you know, just go and leech on someone who is talented. So she's like, oh, Tom Waits.
So have you heard some of this?
I don't have to hear
it. How does Tom Waits allow something like that? I don't know. That's what I want.
He doesn't have a choice in it.
Is that right? Is his record,
his publishing company.
Publishing company.
See, yeah. I would be surprised if he doesn't have very strict control over his music, because he seems to be one of those artists that would.
I don't know.
Does he run his own publishing company?
Fawn, Town with No Cheer, Falling Down, Anywhere I Lay My Head, Fanning Street, Song for Joe, Green Grass, I Wish I Was in New Orleans, I Don't Want to Grow Up.
That's part of it, right? So not only does she do Tom Waits covers, but she does the lesser known.
Right. Just to anger Tom Waits.
And she's clearly going to ruin one of my favorites. Anywhere I Lay My Head.
Yeah, I love that song.
That's the name of the album. Not only is she going to ruin it with the song, she's going to ruin it with the album.
I want to hear less than her sing that song.
Oh, it just angers me. You know.
Well,
what I mean?
So
I wish Mark Harmon would come out with a Tom Waits.
That would be great. Actually, with Hugh Laurie playing back,
playing the bassoon,
or the bassoon.
I have no issue with beating on Scarlett Johansson a little bit. I don't want to beat on this girl, but it's not doing it for me, because speaking of actresses. The album that just came out with
Zooey Deschanel, him and her. And Emma Ward, he's great.
I like her, I like him, but you know, she's just not. I don't know, like I listened to the whole album, play a little right now.
Cried all night till there was nothing more. What you said, my eyes. Healing devotion, but it's just no good. Taking it hard, just like you knew I would. Oh, habits die hard when you got a sentimental heart.
You see what I'm saying? Like, yes. It's just.
Well, here's the thing is, right now, that twee 70s, all, you know, just sprightly, happy kind of music, it's easy to do, but it's not easy to do well. So it's easy to mimic. It's easy to put out that style of music. Many people do. And she figures, I can do that. Because the arrangements are light.
Yeah.
And so, but then when you hear it, you're like, this just isn't good.
Her voice reminds me of Melanie.
You can see her. You can literally see her in your mind with that semi-absent look that she has. Kind of like just like going through this stuff. And like I said, I do like her, but I just... It's time for some music.
All right. What do we got?
This me?
Yep.
This is the husband and wife team of Mates of State from their upcoming album... not released yet, but soon to be. Rearrange Us. This is My Only Offer.
Bought a home, we bought it right. Two kids, two car to light. Those pictures on the walls. Bedroom hall. Can't make it home tonight. Go sleep and leave the light. I pretend to
to be the face in front of me, debating a life, sucked out the energy. Build up a wall made out of finer things, piled it high so we could barely see it. Oh, it's my only offer. My only offer. With my only offer. I once read an interview with them, and I liked them for a long time. I know you guys have been fans as well. Right. And it sounds like this new album is a lot more polished and a little bit more produced than their other stuff. It was a little bit raw before. But anywho, one interviewer asked
Todd.
one interviewer asked them, "What is it like to be on tour and sing and record as a husband and wife team?" And their answer was, "Exactly as you would imagine it is." I thought that was a good answer to a question they probably get all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys, you know what time it is, don't you? Okay, Ross, why don't you hit us with a shout first?
Okay, so I am going to shout out. So Tom Waits just announced a tour, and he, you know, which he rarely does, and I am absolutely crushed that the closest he's getting to Philadelphia is Columbus. Now, what are you shrugging for?
You've driven 100 hours to go see people before?
Right. The reason that I'm crushed is because I would go in a heartbeat, but I'm going to be out of town that weekend already, so I can't go. But he just announced the tour, and if you go to tomwaits.com, he has a video of his, it's like the press conference for announcing the tour. And I don't want to give anything away. Just watch that video. It is fantastic.
Does he cover like a Scarlett Johansson monologue?
No.
Did you hear what he's doing after that? You're, Todd, very close on the heels. They're going to reshoot Lost in Translation, and Tom Waits is going to play her role. Uh-huh. It's going to be awesome.
Wow. Yeah. I'd be a lot more excited about that.
So just go to tomwaits.com and watch the press conference video. You will thank me.
I certainly will, and okay. I'll be thanking you. It's time for our guest, Phil. Phil, do you have a shout-out, anything you'd like to promote, talk about, drop some science on us?
You know, it's funny we're talking about Philadelphia films because, we dipped into Philadelphia filmmaking a couple times. I saw a film, I don't think I'd call it a film. it is perhaps one of the worst films ever based in Philadelphia.
Awesome.
Ever.
And you're shouting it?
And I watched the whole damn thing on midnight till 2 a.m.
Before you say the name, what I've learned from you is you don't walk out of shit. Yeah. You stay and you can watch, sit through any pile of crap.
I forced myself to sit through this whole damn thing. It was made in 1987.
Oh, okay.
It stars Forrest Whitaker
and
Anthony Edwards, and it's called Downtown. And it has nothing redeemable about it whatsoever. And if you're from Philadelphia, you will despise it even more because they just randomly throw in the names of Philadelphia landmarks and neighborhoods and stuff like that just don't fit. So they like,
where did you see this movie?
It was on like the Independent Film Channel or something like that at like midnight, and I forget what it was about it that caught my eye, but then all of a sudden I was dragged into it because I had to see one of my favorite moments in film history is when Rocky turns the corner with a bunch of kids running behind him.
Yeah.
From the Italian market, and the next thing you know, he's running down Kelly Drive with the kids behind him. And you're like, I really don't think those kids followed him from the Italian market all the way to Kelly Drive. But, you know, if you're not from Philadelphia, you don't know that. Well, this film is just, it's from beginning to end, there's nothing about it that's right in Philadelphia. It's great.
But
from their accents to everything.
All right, here's a little trivia. Anthony Edwards, Forrest Whitaker also were in another movie together, one of the greatest comedies of all time, produced in 1983. Directed by Amy Heckerling.
What?
Written by Cameron Crowe.
The Crying Game?
Fast Times at Richmond High.
Wait, they were both in Fast Times?
Yes.
Wow.
Forrest Whitaker was Jefferson, the football player.
Oh.
Anthony Edwards was one of Jeff Spicoli's stoner buds in The Van. And in The Van, there was also another stoner bud, a redheaded actor named Eric Stoltz. Consider that science drop.
So they met
They might have.
And they said, one of them said, I've got this script. you're going to love it. We're going to go to Philadelphia. Right. We're only going to shoot like 5 scenes in Philadelphia. The rest we're going to do in California and make the hills of L.A. look like Philadelphia. But it's
again, what's the name of the film?
It's called Downtown.
Downtown.
Anthony Edwards is a mainline cop, but he gets in trouble, so they send him downtown.
Downtown. City cop.
To hang out with the tough cop.
To punish him.
Forrest Whitaker.
Do you know how many movies are coming here? Transformers 2 coming to Philly.
Transformers 2.
Yeah, shooting here. Hear about that. Demi Moore and what's her name? Guess. And
got all those giant robots going to close down the streets forever.
Parker Posey and Demi Moore.
Nightmare. Giant robots.
The Comcast Center is going to start fighting Liberty One.
I'm so rooting for Liberty One. All right, Todd, what do you got?
Russ and I have an event coming up that I'm actually pretty proud of. And we have things come and go. We don't shout them out.
Is it a horse race?
Often. But, no. No. Russ and the band are going to be playing acoustically, and I will be unveiling a collection of old library books that I have that are defunct and have been withdrawn and taken out of circulation because no one wants them anymore. The information is old, antiquated. So,
you're going to burn them.
That was the first thought, but, kind of like a book mortician, I have taken these books and drawn and painted on the covers to try to breathe new life into them, or at least make them look good again. I'm going to hang them on the walls. The show is going to be called Withdrawn. And for the opening reception, which is Bryn Mawr Milk Boy on June 7th,
awesome.
Russ and the boys will be playing a great acoustic set. We'll be giving out free artwork, and you will see approximately 75 reconditioned, or at least vandalized old books hanging on the wall.
Now, are these withdrawn. Books for, are they for sale?
Yeah, they're going to be for sale. Awesome. But you know, like there's a really rich tradition of kind of handmade books and scribes and illuminated manuscripts. But that's always like at the beginning of the book's life. So I kind of like the idea that these books are dead and sitting in boxes that nobody wants and on their way to the trash. And maybe we can like give them one last hurrah.
So you like post illuminated them then?
That's right. Yeah. Wow. So and people could buy them, leave them on their wall, put them on a shelf, or actually even read them. I don't know.
Can you give me the title of one of the books that you reconditioned?
Better Football for Boys and Girls.
You know why that didn't sell? Because some jerk came out and put the best football for boys and girls, and it sold like hotcakes. Leaving better football.
Trying to line up.
Yeah, you know you got to be on top of
it. But I'm really proud that I'm done about 55 of the books. And I'm really proud and excited. It's kind of a fresh aesthetic and different than anything I've done before. So
do you go through the whole book or?
Oh no!
If you want to keep it a secret,
just the cover. See, the thing is, like they were bought for a school library, and they were bought probably in paperback form. So they send them to binderies, and they have like in most cases kind of either generic or patterned canvas. Hardbound cover. So that's what I'm just painting on the cover. That's just awesome. The cover of the book.
Cool. All right.
It's time for my shout-outs, which I consider the most important shout-outs of all to me. I just stumbled upon this today. There's a little website called Addict-O-Matic. Addict, the word. Addict-O-Matic. And it's basically... if you're really into ego surfing, like finding out where you are on online communities, you just go to this site, type in your name, and it will give you the feedback of where you are on many different sites. Like I put in Todd Marrone here, so you could see, oh, YouTube, there's 4 videos for Todd Marrone. Flickr, here's some girl who has Todd Marrone artwork and is showing it.
Oh, yeah.
Here's on Truvio, here's a bunch of Todd Marrone stuff. Technorati, Rocco Hall Marrone comes up on Technorati. So you can find out where you are.
He's fascinated. Look at him.
Now, look, I put in use wigs, and this was cool. I put in use wigs, and I always like to find out, you know, things that link to wigs. And then I was, like, looking down, and I found an article about a director on Chicago Reader who they quote one of my interviews with this person.
Oh, wow.
So I thought that was neat because it's a, you know, Chicago Reader, pretty high up there in the world of literature. So I thought that was cool. It's a cool way to find how things link to you.
That's great. It would be funny if you were an artist or a musician and you gave that out as your URL. Like, your website is...
like, Addict-O-Matic.
/ Todd Marrone. And then it just kept... It's like, you know, it's another... it's just an engine keeping current.
Are there any dashes or anything in the URL or just...
No, it's addict-o-matic.com. And you could put in... Like, if you put in Russ Stark, I'm sure it would...
You know, speaking of readers like that, I'm finding... The Huffington Post quoted all over the place now with this race.
Yep. They're
which
huge.
Which is cool for Scott.
Yeah, Scott, he gets a lot of hits on his column. And, you know, there's a lot of writers to Huffington Post, and it's a good website. They, you know, they have a lot of really good writers.
Cool.
And I have one more shout. Let me see, Attic Thematic, I got that out of there. Oh, Todd, a little art thing. I'm reading a very good book that I'm sure you enjoy. You might have read it already. Visual Shock, A History of Art Controversies in American Culture by Michael Kamen.
Mm-mm.
It's really good. It's just basically, you know, you think of all the art controversies over the years, and right away, you know, in our era, you think about all, like, Piss Christ and all the, that shocking type of art, you know, with, but this goes back to, like, the late, mid-19th century, like, what was considered shocking there, like...
Like, Impressionism was shocking.
Yeah, shit. Right. Well, everything, even realist painters, like, you know, Aikens, when he did all the nude modeling, like, you know, people, you look at it now, like, yeah, he painted a bunch of boys swimming naked by the side of a pool. I mean, by this, you know, the river, the swimming hole. And you're like, ah, I guess that's normal. But back then, he had his models, you know, there weren't enough nude models, so he had his students take off their clothes and model for each other, which had students' parents up in arms, like they wanted to lynch the guy. You know, it's like cool stuff like that. You're like, oh, you know, there's always controversy.
Yeah, that kind of, didn't he get kicked out of the academy for that?
Yes, he did. Yeah. And the thing about him was, the more and more you read about him, I've been reading a lot about him, he was just kind of a perv. He was a very talented guy, you know, but he really enjoyed everything about having people disrobe, whether it's boys or girls, painting wrestlers, you know, the scholars on the Schuylkill. He really enjoyed the nude male and female form. A little too much, if you ask me. And he was also into, you know, taking photos and then kind of using them as a guide to his paintings.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of really cool, like, controversies you wouldn't think are controversial.
Mm-hmm.
So check that out.
That's interesting. Like, most 20th century artists are famous because they push boundaries.
Yes.
And though we've been callous, perhaps, or desensitized.
Yeah.
You know, like Picasso, obviously, was scandalous when he was abstracting things. And we look at that stuff now, it doesn't really rattle our cages, but people spit on it, they cried, they screamed when they saw it. Art wasn't ugly, you know, before that.
Yeah, just like an artist in, like, the late 1800s who painted a woman with the strap on her gown was a little too low off the shoulder, and people wanted to burn the painting in case their children saw it. That's awesome. We're getting back to an era like that pretty soon. We can all hope. Okay, guys, I think that wraps up shout-outs, if I'm not correct. Any other straggling shouts?
That wraps up the show, Jeff.
What's that?
That wraps up the show.
No, the show cannot end. Why don't we each do a Jandek impression to end the show?
Just like everything Phil takes in, we just go forever and see how many people will stay, or, you know, stay tuned or stay at the show.
So people, what we learned, you're now...
Exercising patience.
You're now enlightened by our podcast, and you're all going to go to YouTube, check out Jandek. Also go to afterschoolspecialist.com,
Phil. Oh. Wow, we haven't updated it in...
Well, I'll give you some... We have you have a couple days while Russ edits this to update it, get all the good stuff there. AfterSchoolSpecialist.com and check out Phil's work. It's fantastic. And we're going to leave now. Goodbye, everybody.